Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining Citizens Climate Lobby's Climate Advocate Training Lesson Number 2. This is the second of two calls or webinars, which can be done in any order. Before we get started, I want to once again recognize that each and every one of you are taking time away from other things like work with your family, your friends, or hobbies to listen to this lesson. And so we're extremely grateful. Thank you. In this lesson, Brett and I will take turns presenting, but first let me introduce myself. My name's Amy Bennett. I'm the Director of Operations with Citizens Climate Lobby. Been with the organization since 2007, and I'm in the North San Diego County area. And first up tonight, Brett's going to give us an overview of what we've covered so far.
Excellent. Howdy, everyone. Welcome back. As Amy mentioned, my name is Brett Cease. I'm the Regional Coordinator down here in Dallas, Texas. And I've been volunteering with CCL since 2011. Couldn't think of a better organization to give time to, so we're glad that you're giving time tonight as well to join us. Most of you already know, if you were on the intro call or listened to it, what we're talking about. But just in case you haven't found it yet, we just really quickly wanted to show you where to find that so you have a chance to hear that recording as well. You can go to our main website and then click on the upper right corner magnifying glass and then enter intro call in the search box. On that intro call, what we did was cover three things. We talked first about the foundation and history of CCL, and then we talked about how Citizens Climate Lobby works, especially how it creates political will, since our fundamental perspective is that politicians respond to political will rather than create it themselves. Then lastly, we described our legislative proposal, Carbon Fee and Dividend, which will address climate change in the most rapid, comprehensible, and equitable manner possible. So, in the last call, or the first part of climate advocacy training, we covered three things. We covered Citizens Climate Lobby's organization and structure. We talked about how citizens actually specifically create or generate political will. And then lastly, we walked through a lot of the different tools that CCL volunteers create and use to generate that political will. In this lesson, we're going to specifically cover three other topics. The first of which is CCL's methodology, and specifically, how we find common ground. How do we build those relationships? We're going to discuss an example of how this methodology worked to create political will and put that into practice. And then lastly, we're really going to do a deep dive into the reasoning behind why a revenue neutral price on carbon, such as carbon fee and dividend, works and is important to adopt. I'll hand it back over to you though first, Amy.
Thank you, Brett. So if you've listened to the intro call or lesson number 1 of this series, you've probably picked up on bits and pieces of our core values. We've discussed showing respect and appreciation for all, even for those who oppose us. And when we talked about Gandhi, we discussed how we should always be striving to look for the best in others. And from day one, Citizens Climate Lobby as an organization has focused on what we're in favor of, not what we're against. So tonight we'll explain another Citizens Climate Lobby concept, looking for common ground, because finding common ground is the key to any long-term relationship. And long-term relationships are what CCL is all about. Building a long-term relationship with a member of Congress and their staff is critical for our success. Here's the good news. We're absolutely convinced we can find some common ground with anyone. When we look for common grounds, we start in three places. We look for shared values, we look for social connections, and we look at places that we care about. Regarding shared values, if you have kids, consider most members of Congress have children. Although most staffers don't have kids, maybe I can connect with them as a parent or as a future parent. So during meetings or introduction, mention your kids or your grandkids. Another example is religion. When you and a member of Congress share the same religion, make the connection by mentioning your religion or church in your introduction. CCL's legislative proposal, Carbon Fee and Dividend, embraces a lot of conservative Republican values. So if you're meeting with a conservative member of Congress, make a connection between yourself and their conservative values and Carbon Fee and Dividend during your introduction. On social connections, we learn about the people we meet in advance. For members of Congress, we find out about their former jobs, their schools, their clubs, and their interests. And you can do the same with the aides or the staffers, although it's more difficult to find information on them. However, you can just ask the aide or the staffer to tell you about themselves. Let me give you an example. In meeting with a congressional aide, we usually start by briefly introducing ourselves. And then after we're done, we frequently say, "You've heard a little bit about us. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? You know, your hometown, where you went to school, how you ended up in Washington, D.C. with Congressman Jones. Also, can you help us understand your role with this office on energy policy?" And this is just not being polite. These are things we really want to know. If there's a hometown or a college connection with somebody on our lobbying team, we're going to make that connection. And that's how you build long-term relationships. And it relaxes the people that we're meeting with. And it gets them talking about themselves instead of us lecturing to them. But common ground can also be literally a patch of ground on this earth, our turf, a place we love, or maybe the member of Congress or the staffer loves. We found that no matter who we talk to, people love this planet passionately. So we can use that as a basis for common ground. Next, we're going to do an exercise about finding out about common ground and developing your personal story. I'll give you a hint. Start thinking of a place you love that's jeopardized by climate change, a place you really want to see preserved for future generations. Now, Brett is going to read a short quote to set up that exercise. Brett?
Thanks, Amy. Yeah. Many people might know E.B. White for being a children's author, but he was also a very outspoken environmentalist towards the end of his life. And I think really to set up this exercise, I'm going to read a passage from an interview, actually, that he gave to the New York Times in the late 60s. And this is what he said. "Every morning, I awake torn between a desire to save the world and an inclination to savor it. This makes it hard to plan the day. But if we forget to savor the world, what possible reason do we have for saving it? In a way, the savoring must come first." In the exercise that we'll be doing in just a minute, I'm going to ask that each of you take time to identify a very specific place that you cherish and that you love. Think about what that looks like, what it sounds like, what it makes you feel, and try to paint a vivid picture of what this is like. Now, this exercise is a way specifically to begin developing a story that you can actually share with others. Stories are very powerful means of connecting with people. And what I'll do is actually give you a specific example from my own life, and then I'm going to ask that you think of your own example to practice sharing. And what we'd like to do is have you share that own example with those around you as well after this presentation. So I'll start by sharing my own story, and then we'll have a chance for you to put it on pause. So for me, my story starts with being a canoe guide in the northern Minnesota Boundary Waters. I have, for the better part of a decade, worked for different nonprofits and spent many summers and even year-round time taking especially youth from inner cities into those wilderness, the towering pine, the cry of the loon, the cool waters, the night sky that you can see here if you're tuning in online with the aurora borealis and northern lights, as well as that Milky Way, beautiful, vivid night sky. And for me, what really was a wake-up call was when I first heard about CCL, it was at a conference actually that I attended at the University of Minnesota, and the lead forestry researcher for the U of M gave one of the talks about the research that he was doing and really highlighted that over the course of this study period, he was finding that trees were migrating northwards at a rate of 10 to 15 feet a day. And if you do the math on that, that means that within my own lifetime, the towering pines and northern green evergreen boreal forest would be beyond the borders of the boundary water. And that in turn, those wilderness areas would be replaced by a succession of other trees and ecosystems, eventually scrubland and oak savanna, and that woods that was transformative to me and for all those students that I was taking would be radically different if business as usual continued. And for you, what I'd like you to do is take a moment and really think about a personal activity in your own and personal experience that you can then share. I'll say that being able to verbalize what you savor or what you are going to be for can be the basis for a more productive dialogue. to be able to demonstrate to others that you share common ground and that you are for something is a much more powerful way of creating political will than to be against something. And I think this is an important distinction, right? CCL is not fighting against the oil and gas companies. We're rather instead for a market-based approach to reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And so with that, I'd invite you to just put this webinar on pause, take a moment, and really challenge yourself to write down some details and specifics on your own saver story, and then practice saying it out loud as well. Maybe you have somebody next to you and you can share those back and forth to each other. But when you're ready, and after you've had a chance to practice, you can hit the pause button again and we'll resume the webinar. All right, thanks everyone. And now Amy is going to talk about putting our methodology into practice.
Thanks, Brett. Let's talk about the different aspects of CCL's methodology and how they came together to help us build relationships. All of these things, showing respect and appreciation, looking for the best in others, and being for something and finding common ground, help us build relationships. How does this all come together to build political will with a member of Congress? Well, here's a case study, and it's a great example of building a relationship with members of Congress that led to political will. On a sweltering June day in 2013, a soft-spoken man from Pennsylvania entered the Rayburn cafeteria on Capitol Hill looking for a quick bite of lunch. The sushi line appeared to be the shortest, so he stepped up to the counter and asked the chef, "What's good?" "Avocado maki," came the reply. A tall man approached with the same question and got the same reply. So the two waited for their orders, and the Pennsylvania man turned to him and smiled and asked, "How's your day going?" "Pretty well," he replied. The tall man turned out to be Representative Ted Deutsch, a Democrat who represents the 21st District in Florida. The two struck up a conversation about global warming and the impact it was having in Representative Deutsch's district. The congressman extended an invitation to continue talking in his office sometime. Thus began the CCL volunteer Jay Butera's 2.5-year quest to bring Republicans and Democrats together to start talking about what had become the most toxic issue in Washington, climate change. So fast forward to February 1st of 2016, and Representative Deutsch joined Florida Republican Congressman Carlos Curbelo to form the first bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus in the House of Representatives. The New York Times called it a promising step towards sanity, one of the first efforts to break the partisan impasse. But the path to building partisan breakthrough is just no straight line. It takes fits and starts to build relationships. Along the way, you learn that yes actually means maybe, and maybe sometimes means probably not. Brett?
So how did everything get to where we are today? I think that really kind of looking at that, stepping back a few years, the Friends Committee on National Legislation, another bipartisan grassroots organization, had called Citizens Climate Lobby's legislative director, Dr. Danny Richter, and said that they were working on a climate change resolution to be introduced by and specifically for Republicans. The idea was that the resolution would be a first step in getting the GOP engaged on the issue by simply agreeing that climate change is a problem that needs to be addressed. The Friends Committee said that they wanted Representative Chris Gibson from New York to be the lead sponsor and asked Dr. Richter if CCL had any constituents in his district. Well, CCL didn't just have a constituent in Representative Gibson's district, they had an energized and active chapter that had already been meeting several times with the representative in person, nurturing a relationship of mutual respect, appreciation, and trust. And that relationship is what made it easy for Representative Gibson to say yes. Aware of Butera's lobbying efforts with the Florida delegation, Dr. Richter called our volunteer, Jay Butera, and got a short list of Republicans he'd been working with who might also sign on to that resolution. Other representatives as well were named, including a young, newly elected, second-generation Cuban-American named Carlos Curbelo, who was waiting to be sworn in for his first term in Congress.
Even in Washington, all politics is local, and Jay Butera decided the endorsements of local leaders in the districts, mayors, commissioners, and business leaders could provide the persuasive juice to bring skittish representatives on board. He drafted a sign-on letter for the South Florida leaders, which opened with this: "We believe it is time for Congress to acknowledge what we in South Florida already know. The escalating costs of sea level rise and other climate impacts now pose a serious threat to the economic stability and future habitability of South Florida. We write to urge you to represent our interests and concerns in this matter. Specifically, we request that you co-sponsor and support an emerging resolution which seeks to acknowledge that sea level is rising. The climate is changing, the risks are substantial, and that Congress should consider potential responses." The letter went on to list 10 points of concern about climate change and its impact on South Florida communities, ending with an appeal to co-sponsor the resolution. Butera and the Miami team went to work getting signatories, and in the end, they amassed endorsements from 55 mayors, commissioners, chambers of commerce leaders, scientists, state representatives, and university presidents. Then, in March of 2015, Representative Curbelo agreed to be the first co-sponsor on the Gibson resolution. The commitment came in a meeting between Jay Butera and Representative Curbelo. Mr. Curbelo agreed that no other Republican had agreed to what no other Republican had been willing to try. He agreed to be the first co-sponsor. "We shook hands on it. I will never forget that moment," Jay said. "It felt like a turning point. After that meeting, I walked outside and called Danny Richter to give him the news. I was standing there looking up at that beautiful Capitol dome thinking, wow, this is really democracy." Meanwhile, other CCL chapters around the country were lobbying their House members along with a coalition of groups that included the French National Committee on Legislation, Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship, and the Environmental Defense Fund. They eventually brought the remaining eight original co-sponsors on board. The Gibson Resolution, they introduced it on September 17th. Since then, additional Republicans have co-sponsored to expand the list to 16, and as of today, complete with the several Freedom Caucus members. Brett?
With several Republicans supporting a resolution calling on the House then to start working on climate solutions and specifically take action in Congress, the next logical step was the formation of something called the Climate Solutions Caucus. So, after making the rounds in the offices of the Gibson Resolution co-sponsors, Jay Butera came to Representative Curbelo with the names of three Republicans who said they'd join the caucus. He also stayed in touch with Representative Ted Deutsch, the South Florida Democrat who'd ordered the avocado maki in the cafeteria with Jay 2 years ago. And with Representative Deutsch on board as the co-chair and a commitment from other Republicans to join the caucus, Representative Curbelo stepped up and the two of them filed that paperwork. 20 House members, 10 Republicans, and 10 Democrats have since joined the Climate Solutions Caucus. Coming on Noah's Ark style, like we like to say, two by two by two, a Republican for every Democrat date to the ball, so that the caucus remains balanced and will continue to do so no matter whose control the House is under, and truly bipartisan. What Jay and the rest of Floridians did is a perfect example of how demonstrating respect and appreciation for others, even those who we think might oppose us, and finding that room for common ground and building those relationships then leads directly to political will. They also appealed to the very best in other congressmen and women as well, and in doing so, created political will locally that allowed these members of Congress to step up and respond to it. And now, Amy's actually going to talk about how we plan to set up a meeting like this.
Thanks, Brett. We have sample meeting outlines available on CCL Community, our sister website. And even though there's no two meetings that are the same, the basic outline is the same. Prior to the meeting, we do research. Before you meet with a member of Congress, you're going to do a little research on them and their district. You'll want to know what they're really proud of, what they like, and what they've accomplished. But you'll also want to know what annoys them, so you'll know not to bring that up. You'll want to research the local impacts of climate change and how a carbon fee and dividend will impact their district and their state. We have biographies at previous minute meetings, meeting minutes, excuse me, for every member of Congress to help with that research. You'll also want to determine who's responsible for follow-up after the meeting and have that scheduled. Third, you want to assign roles such as leader, timekeeper, note taker, asker, and leaver. Our basic meeting outline is as follows. Thank the member of Congress or the staffer for meeting with us. The timekeeper then asks, how much time do you have for our meeting today? We introduce ourselves very briefly, and if it's a meeting with a staffer, then ask the staffer to tell us a little bit about themselves. Show appreciation. Tell them something that they've done recently that you all appreciate. It doesn't have to be about the climate or the environment. Our purpose, to create the political will for a livable world, and our request is to support or introduce legislation that puts a fee on carbon-based fuels and returns the net revenue to American households. We'll have more to say on that, but first we'd like to discuss your concern, Mr. Member of Congress or staffer, and then the discussion part of the meeting. Here are some possible questions that you could ask to further the discussion, but practice situational awareness based on your relationship with the person you're meeting with, rather than reacting to their answer. It's most important to help them feel heard. You might ask, what might be preventing the representative from supporting our legislation? Or who in your district would need to support this? Would we need to convince to support this about the merits of our proposal in order to win your support? Or you might ask, what's your preferred plan to lower emissions? Having done your research ahead of time, you'll probably be able to anticipate what you think their answers might be. Finally, our ask, or if they've indicated they're not quite ready to introduce or support our policy, then introduce a secondary request. We have additional materials. Would you like to have us send them to you hard copy or electronically? And what's the best way to follow up with you? Also, with whom do you work with across the aisle? And lastly, thank them for their time. Now that's how we do a meeting with a congressional office. That's a very high level overview. And there's more detailed training on lobbying on the CCL University section of CCL Community website. If you've not joined that site again, please join soon. There's incredible resources there. Let's finish up this lesson with a discussion of the economics of a carbon fee and dividend. And so Brett's going to talk about CCL's legislative proposal. Brett?
Great. Yeah, thank you so much, Amy. So we really just have one last thing to cover, and that's CCL's legislative proposal and the specifics behind carbon fee and dividend. CCL is largely betting the farm on a market-based solution. So what does that really mean? Well, to really answer that, I think it makes sense to go back a little bit and look at the overall cost and focus of how we're shifting and using market forces within this policy. So today, the price we consumers pay for fossil fuels is artificially low. This is due to several factors, from just really thinking about before production. Fossil fuel producers receive discounted leases on public lands and on offshore leases as well. During production, fossil fuel producers receive subsidies or special tax breaks and eminent domain to make pipeline construction easier as well. And then lastly, after production, the price that we pay for fossil fuels doesn't include some huge hidden costs. So this is really all contributing to the current low price, artificially low, for fossil fuels. Some of those hidden costs include factors like the military. The US military spends trillions of dollars protecting energy supply lines all across the world to guarantee safe, reliable delivery to your and I's homes and to the pump. The health factors as well really are important to consider. The use of coal, for example, increases healthcare costs by some estimates of $300 to $500 billion a year. On top of that, there are also additional environmental and climate costs associated with adapting to or trying to mitigate the effects of a changing climate system. And I think really overall, the focus is that if the market price of any product, not just fossil fuels, doesn't include its real costs, what that is called by economists is a market failure. And global warming, by some, has been called the greatest market failure in history. So economists say, given a market failure, that first best step to correcting it is to hold a product accountable for its costs. With fossil fuels, this means that we need to move those hidden costs from the back end that we discussed earlier, military, health, environmental, climate-related ones, back onto the balance sheets up front for the fossil fuel producers, so that with all those costs fully accounted for, we then can let fossil fuel companies compete with other forms of energy in the marketplace. Market friendly. When consumers realize that the true cost of burning fossil fuels has real costs that are associated, they will make more and better informed decisions. And so with that, then, I think it's helpful to look at what those options are in putting those costs then on the front end. Amy, if you wouldn't mind going over those several options.
Thanks, Brett. We've got four basic options. It's important to note that each of these options will work. However, they require different levels of enforcement, and some cost more than others. First, there's regulation, straight regulation, what critics call command and control. This is the most obvious way to tackle the problem. It's obvious because we see negative impact from routine behavior, and so some public authority needs to take action to be sure that the activity does not harm others. In the strict regulatory scenario, the response to excess carbon emissions entails boots on the ground and eyes on the problem. People with salaries monitoring the behavior of emitters. This tends to get expensive and can be undercut by underfunding. It's most useful where less intrusive options are not available or just don't work. Second, cap and trade. Cap and trade sets a cap, a maximum for total emissions, and then sells permits for the right to pollute up to that cap. And it allows for trading of permits. Cap and trade creates regulation enforcement by trading of artificial assets, the permits. It can help reduce emissions, but it is complex and requires new regulatory mechanisms, both for the cap and for the trading market, and is usually narrower in scope than a more straightforward carbon tax. Third, a carbon tax. Taxes begin to account for the cost of something that generates hidden costs. So the tax eliminates market distortions and allows enterprise to go to work. Instead of requiring regulation to get bad behavior under control, a straight up carbon tax operates on the assumption that if the consumer understands the true costs, then the harm will be eliminated by putting economic pressure on suppliers to reduce that harm. Think cigarettes or alcohol. One problem with a straight up carbon tax, it is that it's designed to put pressure on consumers to reduce consumption, which then can constrain overall economic activity. Now, the Congressional Budget Office, or CBO, has looked at some carbon taxes before, and the CBO says carbon taxes are a drag on the economy. The Congressional Budget Office tells Congress that a $10 per ton carbon tax on carbon dioxide would raise about $55 billion in federal revenue, raise gas prices about 10 cents a gallon, raise electricity prices about a penny per kilowatt hour, slow job growth and GDP growth, or gross domestic product, cut CO2 emissions very little. So a poorly designed carbon tax can have negative impacts on the economy. So the final option is the carbon fee and dividend. To overcome the constraint on economic activity that would result from a straight up carbon tax and to reduce the harm caused by the burning of fossil fuels, Citizens Climate Lobby proposes the carbon fee and dividend. This puts a steadily increasing fee starting at $15 a ton per year on the fossil fuels and increasing by $10 a ton each year. It is impacted at the source. The fee comes at the source where they are first introduced into the economy, and 100% of the net revenues are then returned directly to households. And that's in a monthly dividend check. As we discussed in the first climate advocate training class, we propose a border adjustment so that goods produced in the US are treated the same as goods produced in foreign countries. This requires no new spending, no new bureaucracy, no new regulation, and it allows the Main Street economy to keep chugging along and even expand while sending a direct price signal to investors that the smart path for future investing is moving towards low carbon energy sources. A clean fee and dividend plan allows even the energy sector to transition investments to cost effectively so that we see economic gain and not economic harm. I should point out that revenue neutrality, which means returning the net revenue to American households, is also politically important. We desperately need Republican leadership on climate. Most Republican members of Congress signed the pledge not to support any net tax increase. So politically, revenue neutrality means Republicans can vote for Citizens Climate Lobby's fee without violating their pledge. Now, Brett's going to talk a bit more about the Congressional Budget Office, or the CBO.
Great. Thanks, Amy. Yeah. So I think really based on the carbon fee and dividend solution that we've been talking about, an important question to ask is, what would the CBO analysis of carbon fee and dividend look like? Well, we don't know yet, the straight answer is, because they haven't scored it, but we have had independent analysis done on our own from trusted groups like REMI, which really report that all of those negative yard signs and yardsticks, rather, would flip from negative to positive. Instead of being a drag then on the economy, CCL's proposal would be an economic stimulus, actually. And specifically diving into that, instead of slowing job growth, you know, jobs would grow faster. Over 20 years, REMI's report shows that CCL's proposal would actually generate an additional 2.8 million jobs. On top of that, instead of slowing GDP, it actually would grow faster. Over the 20-year period of the policy's window, we would look at an additional $1.3 trillion within that study as well. And no matter what, how high the carbon fee goes, most consumers would see no net increase in their energy costs. And that's because their monthly dividend check will cover or even more than cover all their rising energy costs. That includes direct energy, like gas and electricity, but it also includes indirect energy costs to produce those goods and services that we all depend and buy. So finally, really the most important measure that we're really focused on also is, what would carbon fee and dividend do to really cut or really focus on emission reductions? Well, really, instead of a modest CO2 cut, by 2035, emissions would be cut in half is what we found. We'd be on a path to get 80% cuts of carbon dioxide emission by 2050. And again, CCL's solution matches the scale and the timing of the problem. I think that there's a really great saying about really the difference between a carbon tax and carbon fee and dividend. And that comes from the famous satirist Mark Twain, our own American. He says that the difference between the right word and the almost right word is the difference between lightning and a lightning bug. So tonight's takeaway is this. There's really a big difference between a carbon tax and a carbon tax that's revenue neutral. So we know that that's a lot of information that we just threw at you. But remember, you can always refer back to this lesson or the other lessons that are devoted to explaining carbon fee and dividend on CCL University's section of community. I think really to close this webinar, though, it's great to really have a quote from the story and the fabled expedition of Sir Ernest Shackleton, who in 1914 embarked on an expedition to Antarctica. All of this is captured in his famous story and portrayal of that journey, The Endurance. And he posted this advertisement to recruit people for that actual fabled expedition. Men wanted for hazardous journey, small wages, bitter cold, long months of complete darkness, constant danger, safe return doubtful, honor and recognition in case of success. Well, we want to thank you for responding to this challenge and joining us in these efforts. Amy?
Thank you all for joining us. And I just want to take a moment to tell you about some next steps. So you've completed the Climate Advocate Training Lesson Number 2. If you didn't happen to take these in order, you can take Climate Advocate Training Number 1 anytime. So I'd love to ask, have you joined CCL Community, our sister website for Citizens Climate Lobby members? If not, you can register or log in at community.citizensclimatelobby.org. Brianna at our headquarters will send you a login and password within about a day. And you can reach her if you have any trouble. Brianna with one N, B-R-I-A-N-N-A ANA at citizensclimate.org. She'll also be reaching out to you to connect you with either the group leader of the chapter nearest you or your regional coordinator. And to contact us, you can reach me at Amy, A-M-Y, at citizensclimate.org, and Brett can be reached at Brett, B-R-E-T-T, dot Cease, C-E-A-S-E, at citizensclimate.org. If you have any trouble reaching your group leader or regional coordinator, please reach out to us and we'll help you make that connection. We're growing by leaps and bounds, and our goal is to support you in this important work. So contact us if you need help, and we'll do our best to answer your question or direct you to the person who can. That's all for today, and thanks again for joining us so that we can build the political will for a livable world. Thank you all.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.